The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is the Showdown. With Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk mixed martial arts, Strikeforce, Dream, Bellator, UFC, and everything in between on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 in Toronto, and Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 960 in Calgary. Once again, my co-host in studio is Tyler Mason. You can catch him on Twitter at Tyler Mason, as well as myself at Showdown Joe. And we break news, talk about all the different stuff that's happening in the world of mixed martial arts, and we will talk a little bit later about UFC 133, Ortiz versus Evans 2. Or I guess it's Evans versus Ortiz 2. That's the way the UFC is promoting it. And we'll talk heavily about Strikeforce and the results from last weekend in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, where Fedor Emelianenko fell prey, in my opinion, to a tactical error against Dan Henderson. We'll get into that momentarily. A new women's champion was crowned, and we'll talk about the rest of the main card and a few of the other scenarios from Strikeforce. And again, UFC 133, and we'll talk about some other news that's out there in the world of mixed martial arts. Tyler, how was your weekend? Cottage, I heard.
Yeah, it was good. Actually had to miss Strikeforce Fedor Henderson. I caught it later on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the weekend's been great. Just trying to get back into the whole groove of regular day life.
Did you get a chance to relax at the cottage, or did you simply just go out there and wreak havoc?
Well, I went up there thinking that I was going to relax a lot, get a chance to read a book I've been reading. And yeah, I ended up just boating the whole time, tubing, and just pretty much having a lot of fun. So yeah, I didn't really get any downtime that I really wanted, but it was a lot of fun.
I'm noticing a change in your posture. For those that have been paying attention to the show recently, Tyler likes to lay back completely, bring the microphone as close to him as possible, and if he was on a couch, he'd be happy. But you're standing, or you're sitting, you know, posture's up, chin up, chest forward. Did you go to a chiropractor or something?
No. You might notice something different about my skin tone. I got a little too much sun on the weekend, so I'm a little bit burnt.
Don't
across
complain.
My
we
back.
Live in Canada. We need as much sun as possible.
I definitely need as much sun as possible.
All right, let's move forward to the Strikeforce card that we saw last weekend, or at least I saw it live. You saw it about a day or so later. Main event, Fedor Emelianenko, Dan Henderson. That's the headlines that's out there right now. And Fedor Emelianenko, we actually, it was a one of those bouts. I mean, as soon as they touched gloves, Fedor switched it to fifth gear, started attacking Dan Henderson, made a mistake chasing him down. Henderson catches him with a left hook, followed up with a right sort of hook or cross. We'll just say punch for now. And then, you know, he rocked Fedor. The bout continued. But Fedor, you know, we've seen many times when he's hurt, he can be very dangerous. And he ends up catching Dan Henderson, drops him, but when he goes in for the finish, he gets overzealous and doesn't ever stabilize his position. At one point, he's smart. He does clear the legs. He pushes the legs over to his right, basically passing the guard. We all remember what happened with Shane Carwin and Brock Lesnar. You need to move those legs, and he didn't. He fatigued himself. Cain Velasquez did it to Lesnar, did push the legs, and you know, basically picked and chose his punches. So Fedor sort of does that, but gets overzealous, goes to punch out Henderson, goes to finish him off, but he leaves space. He doesn't stabilize the position. He leaves space, giving Henderson enough time to turn into him and grab Fedor's right leg. And as Fedor, again, doesn't try to prevent Henderson from doing either a sweep or some sort of reversal, continues to try to rain down punches. Well, when he throws the one punch, Henderson uses his momentum, brings him over to his right side, slips out, and gets on top. And the smart thing, doesn't throw the punch over Fedor's shoulder, throws the punch underneath his armpit. A very underutilized technique in mixed martial arts. Actually, one of the guys I look up to that I really respect, Jordan Breed from SureDog.com, always mentions that. He's a huge proponent of that, and it's a smart move, and it paid dividends because he not only nailed Fedor with the punch, he knocked him out. Albeit, it was a flash knockout because the minute referee Herb Dean saw that Fedor was out, he jumped in to stop the bout. But by the time he got in there to halt it and Henderson continued to punch, Fedor was able to not only wake up but turn around to see where Henderson was. So there was a lot of complaints after the fight that it was an early stoppage. In my opinion, it was not an early stoppage. The referee's job is the safety of the fighter. And when he sees a fighter go out, it automatically triggers him to step in and stop the fight. Between the time he steps in and the time he stops the fight, The fighter could wake up, but bottom line is, I think Herb Dean made a great call in halting that bout. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think definitely it was a great call. I mean, he flattened out completely, and he took two or three shots, you know, while he was unconscious, and they could even be the shots that woke him up again. So I think it was a great stoppage. And on the whole finish, there was actually two mistakes that Fedor had in the grappling department. First is after he hurt Henderson, he didn't secure the underhook.
Yep.
And if he had that underhook, Henderson wouldn't be able to go towards his back. Second is, once he didn't secure the underhook and Henderson's moving towards his back, he could have put a whizzer, and then that would have prevented Henderson from being able to, you know, get fully up to his knees and towards Henderson's back. I mean, Fedor's back, and he could have, like, thrown him back down a little bit with that that whizzer. It just shows kind of a weakness in Fedor's game, and it's his wrestling. You know, yeah, that's pretty much, to me, those are, like, the last kind of moments he had a chance to keep himself in the fight before getting, you know, flattened out and knocked out.
Fedor's brother Alexander recently came out with some comments about a day or so after the bout, and you know, the translation was tough to figure out. The first translation that I got was that he was blaming Fedor's coaches. The translation I got from our pals over at MiddleEasy.com was actually it's his managers. Alex was you know, pointing the blame towards his managers. Either way you look at it, Tyler, you got to think about a couple things here. Fedor's last three fights, or even his last, you know, whack of fights, okay? He hasn't fought high caliber competition until recently. The last three bouts, in essence, that were in Strikeforce. Tactically, he made an error against Verdum. That was obvious, in getting caught with the triangle / armbar / tapo, whatever it was. Against Antonio Silva, he was just a big man. He got beat up. And against Henderson, we saw, like you said, it was wrestling. Wrestling basics and stabilizing the position. You could also say jiu-jitsu. Before you go in for the finish, you got to stabilize your position. Tactical errors like that shouldn't be happening at a guy like Fedor, arguably, you know, the greatest heavyweight of all time. I mean, that luster is beginning to die off now. And these are mistakes that he shouldn't be making, because these are things that he should know competing at the elite level. So the question is, does this guy, and I think he does, he needs to leave the confines of his inner circle and get out there. If he wants to continue his career, get out there. First of all, go to 205. Drop down to 205. Even though you lost to Henderson, you need to go down to 205 and fight guys your own size. And at the same time, get out there and train with some of the world's best coaches and best fighters to up your game. Because in my opinion, the sport of mixed martial arts has evolved past Fedor Emelianenko.
That might be so. And I mean, we've discussed this previously on this program before. We've said, you know, Fedor really needs to go out there and get a modern day camp. He's
yep.
spent all of his time in Russia with the same trainers and the same tactics and the same kind of process. And I mean, it's really hard to argue with a guy who went undefeated for the better part of a decade in you know, a weight class that he was very undersized for. So, I mean, you can see where it'd be hard to convince Fedor to change. I mean, especially at this point in his career, he's had three losses. I don't think he's going to go reinvent himself, but if he did decide to change his camp, I really think the things he needs to work on are, you know, the grappling aspect of mixed martial arts. I mean, that was his undoing in the Verdum fight.
Well, grappling, I don't know. Grappling, yes, I understand what you're saying about grappling, because he's a great sambo fighter. He's proven that, but I think it's his jits and his wrestling, like you say, that really needs to evolve.
But with sambo, because he, you know, Fedor works primarily in combat sambo, and you know, it's very similar to mixed martial arts. There's a lot of striking in it as well.
So, throwing.
I mean, he has the throws of the judo part of sambo down. He's obviously got the submissions as well. And, you know, his striking is superb. I mean, despite his technical errors in striking, he can strike with pretty much anyone in MMA, I would argue. But I think, you know, we've seen his weakness with the Verdum fight. He got caught in the triangle. Submission defense needs a little work. With the Bigfoot Silva, he was getting taken down and mounted. And, you know, he really didn't have the defense on the ground in that fight off his back. And in the Henderson fight, you know, it wasn't really the striking that was the undoing. It was the simple wrestling, you know, from all fours. And even from the side control / half guard position. So, to me, I really think that's the area he needs to work on if he's gonna fully you know, reinvent himself. But I just don't see it happening. I think more than likely you might see him one more fight, or Fedor just kind of bow out.
So the question is, where does he go from here? Because I'm pretty confident that Strikeforce will not re-sign him. I highly doubt He's going to go to the UFC. I don't think Dana White told me. We all remember the famous clip where he said, "Why would I sign Fedor when he just lost? We don't sign fighters coming off a loss." Well, he's coming off three losses right now. So the options are out there. I mean, of course, you know, we saw Nate Marquardt go to Bama. Fedor is a part owner of M1 Global. There's an option right there. And, of course, the land of the rising sun, be it Japan or what's happening in Asia with so many of these other organizations, you know, in Singapore, there's going to be options for Fedor out there. Is he willing to take a pay cut, or is management willing to take a pay cut? You know, you're smiling over there, Tyler. What's on your mind?
I'm smiling because I kind of have an idea of what I think would happen to Fedor. If he doesn't re-sign with Strikeforce, I mean, you can see kind of the outpouring of crowd support that he had during the Henderson fight, and even afterwards. I mean, the American fans are really kind of latching on to Fedor, and Strikeforce could still use him to push a card, I think, at least one more. But what we've seen with the whole Alistair Overeem situation, and even if you want to throw Karatanov in there with the United Glory card in Russia, there's obviously a fan base in Russia that's growing, and Fedor is arguably the biggest name to ever come out of Russia.
No, there's no doubt.
So here you have a company that he's part owner with, you know, primarily based out of Russia and Europe, and you have the largest fighter. I think what more than likely would happen...
M1 does have a deal with Showtime.
I think what's more than likely going to happen is Fedor's not going to take a pay cut and fight in Japan. He'll maybe take a pay cut and fight for M1 because it's further pushing a brand that he has financial interest in. I mean, to me, that would make a lot more sense than him taking a pay cut anywhere else other than to push a brand that he has a reason to push.
And we're both talking as if he's not going to retire. I don't think he's going to retire. I don't think he needs to retire because he is young. But you and I had a conversation off air that I don't believe he's damaged goods. You know, like, you know, we talked about Wanderlei Silva. Wanderlei Silva has taken way too much punishment. And if he wants to continue, he has to change his style. And unfortunately, I don't think he'll ever be able to change his style. I hope he does, but you never know. With Fedor, I don't think he's damaged goods. I just think he's lost his last three fights, two of which were tactical errors. And the second one was simply, you know, he got beat up by a bigger man and a guy that's in a big guy that cuts to 265. And that was a sign to me that he needs to go down to 205, fight at light heavyweight. Does Fedor retire?
I think there's a good chance he retires, but I think more than likely he'll have one more fight in him. Great fighters tend not to know when to hang up the gloves. I'm not saying that Fedor necessarily has to hang up the gloves. I just think that he's definitely past his prime. The chances of him ever winning a world title are a lot more slim now than they were.
Of course, yep.
And, you know, I think going forward, when it's just that kind of thing that happens to great fighters. They just don't know when to call it quits. And I think it might be time. I mean, three losses in a row after going undefeated in 30 fights, something's up. It's probably his time has passed him by.
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't feel that. He needs to leave.
I
think he does have the skill. I think, again, he needs improvement also in his striking. As much power as he does have, when he chased down Dan Henderson in the beginning of that fight, he chased him down with his arms by his side. I mean, you saw it in this week's episode of UFC Connected. His hands were down by his side. That's a no-no. And he got hit with a monstrous left hook. I mean, the fonts were still up on the screen, letting fans know which fighter was which gloves or what color they were wearing. And Fedor had already been rocked with a left hook and with a right afterwards. So the little small things like that need to be adjusted, need to be cleaned up, need to be, you know, polished. At the same time, he's not 43. You know, he's in his early 30s. And like I said, I don't think he's taken that much damage in his career. You know, he has taken beatings. Don't get me wrong. He got dropped on his head by Randleman and his bouts with you know, like you actually mentioned that his hands and wrists could be all messed up and he cuts very easily. But I don't think he's taken damage like a Chuck Liddell took damage and guys that were consistently in those brawls like a Nogueira, Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. Those are guys that have taken damage. So in my opinion, he still has a bit left. He just needs to get out there and clean it up. If he retires, you know, I bid him a fond adieu, fond farewell. You know, thank you for all the memories. I don't think you're 3-2 or 3-3 like Chael Sonnen says. And you know, thank you for all the memories. But, you know, Tyler, 20 seconds you got. I don't think he's going to retire.
I don't think he does either. I think he has one more fight and then possibly that's the end.
All right. Well, coming up after the break, we will continue to talk about this Strikeforce card. We'll talk about Misha Tate, who is the new Strikeforce Women's Bantamweight Champion. Is she the new face of mixed martial arts? Is she willing to accept this job or this label, this new thing that's going to be, you know, thrust upon her? But she also has to take on Sarah Kaufman, who beat her in 2009. We'll talk more about Misha Tate and the rest of the card, the rest of the belts, and we'll look forward to UFC 133. You're listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 in Toronto, and Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 960 in Calgary.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com. This is The Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Strikeforce, and everything in between on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 in Toronto, and Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 960 for our pals in Calgary. All right, Tyler, are we done with the Fedor conversation? Because we can keep talking about this forever, but I think I'm done.
I think we're done for now.
All right. Let's move forward to the co-main event from Strikeforce, Fedor versus Henderson. And that was a women's bantamweight championship belt where Marlos Kunin, then champion, took on Misha Tate. Marlos Kunin had never been submitted in her professional prize fighting career until she met Misha Tate last Saturday night. And Misha Tate set her up in a beautiful, beautiful arm triangle choke. First round, Misha wins it with her takedowns, but really minor ground and pound. Second round was complete domination by Marlos Kunin. She took her down with a kimura. It's an old school throw you probably learn at white belt where you get a standing kimura, you stick your leg on the inside and you roll the guy or girl backwards and you secure the submission and or the position. Third round could have went either way. I scored it for Misha Tate based on the takedowns and whatnot, but then the fourth round, different story altogether. They get back down to the ground. Misha gets, I think it was Misha that got the takedown, but she was too close to the cage, whereas Marlos Kunin could have had her whole body towards the center of the cage. Misha was sort of trapped in the cage, but in top control. Some odd reason, Kunin gives her space by placing her feet onto the cage and pushing off, now creating tons of space for Misha Tate to work. From that position, she had side control and over the top of Kunin's body. And Kunin starts laying right elbows downwards to Misha's head. Misha, after the third elbow, uses that and uses her skull and pushes up. Pushes Marlos's arm back into her own head and then cusps around with her own right arm underneath and clasps, setting up the arm triangle choke. From there, you know, Kunin tried to prevent her from sliding through, but almost effortlessly, Tate slides through, secures position, drops her hips, drives her left foot into the mat, and pushes forward, squeezing, you know, preventing the oxygen of blood from getting to Misha Tate or to Kunin's brain. She had a couple of options, and two of which were tap out or pass out. She taps out, new champion, Misha Tate. What did you think of that? Because you're a jiu-jitsu guy. What did you think of that setup?
I thought the setup was really good. There was a couple points, like when she kind of moved, she had the choke locked on, she kind of moved back towards mount that I thought that was kind of the wrong thing to do.
And
I thought
she put her knee up on her belly?
Yeah, and I thought she might like let Kunin out there, but once she kind of sprawled back down, I knew she wasn't going to let it go. The opportunity was just too large. I mean, we compared it before to off air to Verdum and Fedor. I mean, once you have that and that you feel that moment and you say this, if I squeeze everything here, it can completely change my entire career. So I knew with that kind of thought going through her mind that there was going to be nothing that would pry her off of Kunin. But I think what led to kind of the end and that takedown was success earlier in the fight with Kunin going for a choke. I believe it was the first round. It was kind of an anaconda.
Anaconda, yep.
But she was in the front, so it was almost like a guillotine with the rear naked choke
hand
position.
Hand position, yep.
And there was a point where it actually looked like Misha was going to tap to that choke. She brought her hand up, and you know, Kunin was really squeezing, and then Misha was able to get off to the side and to get out. And every time there was a close takedown, you could see Kunin fishing for a choke. And it happened twice, two other times. And on that last takedown, she was going for a choke when she got wedged up against the cage, and Tate got out. So I actually think that early success with that choke off the takedown made her to think more about a submission and less about takedown defense, which led to her being on her back and then eventually being put in the arm triangle. So it's kind of funny how earlier success can actually cause you to fail later on.
Well, you live and learn from failures and mistakes, and that's how you get success, right? That's just a proven fact. Now, Miesha Tate emerges victorious. She's the new women's bantamweight champion, like we mentioned. Standing in the crowd, or sitting in the crowd, paying very close attention, was Sarah Kaufman from, our pal from BC. And she was, you know, hoping Kunin would have won because she wanted to avenge that loss that she had to Kunin, because it was Kunin who defeated Sarah to become the champ, and now Tate is the champion. But Sarah Kaufman defeated Miesha Tate in 2009. It was a decision, a three-rounder. This one will be a five-rounder. How do you think this fight breaks down? Because if there's one thing that I noticed about Miesha Tate, is she really needs to work on her striking. You know, it's not as crisp as, the boxing that Sarah Kaufman has. And Sarah Kaufman, I don't think is that easy to take down. You know, in comparison to Marlos Kunin. I think Sarah Kaufman's going to make sure this fight stays standing, and I wouldn't be surprised if she punches out Miesha Tate for five rounds. Now, Miesha, on the other hand, if she does get Sarah down to the ground, this could get pretty ugly, because Misha's jiu-jitsu is really slick, her wrestling is really, really good. I think it's a great fight. The other question I want to ask you is, A, not only how do you break down that fight, but B, start off with Miesha Tate now as the new champion, and potentially becoming the face of women's mixed martial arts, because we know Gina Carano is rumored to come back later this year. I don't believe it. I'll believe it when I see it. She is the face, or was the face, of women's MMA. Miesha Tate has the beauty to do that. I'm not saying Marlos doesn't, because Marlos is beautiful. Sarah Kaufman's beautiful. I'm not saying they don't have the beauty. But Miesha Tate has a different sort of look, and it's that look that gets you into that mainstream. And we talked about it before, whether we like it or not. Facts are facts. If you just look at historically, beautiful women will get cover. Beautiful women will get the front page. Beautiful women will get all the headlines. Miesha Tate is a beautiful girl that I think has the capability of taking this sport for women to the next level. Do you think she'll accept this role? She said it's up to the fans and up to the media, and I think it should be the other way around. She should do her best to try and, because, listen, man, bottom line is you make a lot of money, Miesha Tate, if you accept this role, at the same time defend your title. Talk about Miesha Tate as a potential face of women's MMA, and then break down the Sarah Kaufman boat.
As far as being the face of women's MMA, I think Miesha Tate, for her own personal gain, it would be smart to do. But I think as far as the gain of women's MMA being taken seriously, I think you can't just push one fighter. I don't think you can just push one woman as the face of MMA. I think that's a complete mistake. You'll run into the same problem you ran in with Gina Carano. She's going to get in there with someone like Cyborg. She's going to get destroyed. And then what are you left with? You're left with the face of your, I guess, division, even though there's two really big divisions in women's MMA right now. You're faced with your division being completely destroyed because you have no one to carry a card. I think the focus should always be the champion. I think as long as Miesha Tate has the championship at the welterweight division, that she should, you know, get the attention, and she should be the quote-unquote face of women's MMA. But I don't think that someone should be pushed beyond that. I mean, even with Gina Carano now, she's making like a legit Hollywood movie. I mean, if you see the trailer for Haywire, it's got legit A stars in there. It's got a great director, and it's one of the few.
You can check it out at showdown.ca, by the way. It's awesome.
It's one of the few MMA, you know, one of the few movies that an MMA star has been in that's actually
good.
Yeah.
Quality.
Quality is a better word. So, I mean, she's moving up and beyond the sport that she's coming from. I mean, if she does fighting, I mean, she's going to be a bigger star outside of MMA than any other women's fighter because of that movie alone. I mean, you can look what, you know, the A-Team did to Rampage. He's a household name, and he hasn't had a title since he lost it to Forrest Griffin. So being in a movie is definitely going to make her the biggest star. As far as the Miesha Tate, Sarah Kaufman fight, I think you got to give the advantage to Kaufman. We saw in the Liz Carmouche fight, her takedown defense is excellent. It's much better than Marlos Kunin's, and she has power standing, and I think her stand-up is just, you know, in another league compared to Miesha's. So I think Miesha's going to have a tough time taking her down, tough time controlling her against the fence, and I think Kaufman will win the stand-up battle.
So in essence, it's in Miesha's best interest to take as much advantage of this popularity as she can now.
Now, for sure, now.
Well, in general, you should. You know, you're always one fight away from a loss. That's a fact. So, I mean, I think she should take advantage of it. But, like you mentioned, I mean, it's a tough cookie to crack right now with only two divisions, major divisions, especially if you want to, listen, if she wants to endear herself to the UFC brass, get out there, man. make yourself as popular as possible.
I'll tell you, the best example I can give, even men's MMA cannot survive on one name alone. We've seen that in the history
Kimbo
of MMA.
Slice.
Kimbo Slice is the fighter I was going to mention. That's the biggest example you can see. Even when MMA was at its peak, or, you know, its peak from, you know, struggling to be taken seriously to mainstream, right when that happened, Kimbo Slice was, you know, heading up Elite XC. They put all their eggs in one basket, and, you know, they completely blew up in their face. That's what happens when you put all your financial push into one fighter. You shouldn't do it for women's MMA. You can't do it for men's MMA. You can't do it for any sport, period, in my opinion. So I think they should be pushing the division, pushing their champion, and just leave it at that.
Fair enough. I mean, it does go without saying. You're not pushing as many stars as you can or building as many stars as you can. You know, people, the fans will only relate to one fight or one fighter only. So I understand what you're saying. I'm saying for women, though, like, it's got to change. You know, like, I mean, there's so many talented women out there. And, you know, I'm not saying they all have to be beautiful, because there's some tough as they're tough as nails out there. And I don't think that they're appreciated as much for their skill. And I think I'd like to see a lot more women's MMA. I was back in the day. I was always like, no, I don't want to see women fighting. I can't deal with, you know, women punching themselves in the face and damaging their beautiful looks. And then I was just saying, wait a second, man, these girls are tough. It's always fighting the night with these girls. Let them do it. Go ahead. It's awesome.
I'll tell you a good example if you want to compare the two women's divisions, 45 and 35. We won't talk about the 120 division, but if you look at 45 and 35, there's actually now more stars in 135 that you can name as compared to a couple of years ago when people could only name Gina Carano and Cyborg at 145.
Yep.
And I'd say the casual fan out there probably could still only name two fighters in the women's division at 145, and that would be Gina Carano and Cyborg Santos. So I think the welterweight division on the women's side is having a more successful time pushing more stars than the 145-pound divisions. And I think that if you really want to compare the two divisions, that's what you have to do. You have to push more stars. You got to get more names out there, because you can't have the same female fighters fighting the same female fighters over and over again.
All right. We got about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes to talk about the other three fights here. So let's be really quick in terms of our thoughts. Robbie Lawler takes on Tim Kennedy. Tim Kennedy pitched a 3-round shutout. I tweeted during the bout that I think Lawler was hurt heading into that third round because he just did nothing. I mean, he hit Kennedy with that left uppercut in the second round, split him open, had a chance to do whatever he could to finish him off. But in the third round, he had to have known he was down at least one round, if not two rounds, but didn't do anything. Your thoughts on that fight?
Yeah, definitely somewhere in I've noticed it in the mid of the halfway through the third round, something was wrong with Robbie Lawler. I was extremely impressed early on with his takedown defense. And that's not to take anything away from Tim Kennedy, because I was extremely impressed with his wrestling, his shots. He was penetrating so well. And there was one double leg in the first round where he penetrated really hard and spun right around to get the takedown. Both these guys were putting on a great performance. And Tim Kennedy, man, like, he showed how tenacious he was. He was just continually driving forward, grabbing on the Lawler, doing whatever he could to get those takedowns. So I was really impressed.
Props to Tyron Woodley against Paul Daly. He fought the good game plan, but you know, almost lost it all in the third round. But props to Tyron, a serious contender. He's getting ready for that title shot.
Yeah, I mean, his gas was a factor in that third round. It really looked at the end of the second round, he looked pretty tired, and then the end of the third round, he looked extremely tired. But good on him. That's the biggest win to date in his career.
And Tariq Saifuddin was victorious against Scott Smith. I think time has come now for Scott Smith to reevaluate, perhaps walk away from the sport. But it looks like Saifuddin and Willie are going to have a rematch, likely for the title.
Yeah, and Saifuddin basically used Scott Smith as a walking punching bag. He just
target practice.
Yeah,
nonstop.
Just went, you know, crazy all over him. There was a couple times he hurt him, but you know, if we looked in the past with Scott Smith fights, it was probably a smart idea for Saifuddin not to jump all over him, because you know Scott could finish a fight at any moment. So I think it was a very, very good performance from Tariq Saifuddin.
All right, coming up after the break, we will talk UFC 133 Evans versus Ortiz 2 on Sportsnet Radio The Fan 590 in Toronto, as well as Sportsnet Radio The Fan 960 in Calgary.
This is the Showdown with Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio The Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. Once again, my co-host is Tyler Macy. You are listening to the Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 in Toronto, and the Fan 960 in Calgary. Okay, Tyler, UFC 133 goes down in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I will be down there. Gonna have a great time. It's the second time I've gone down to Philly. It's the second time the UFC's having an event there. Looking forward to visiting the Rocky statue and those big, you know, steps that I get to run up like Rocky did. I get to relive my youth watching those Rocky movies. But a lot of the fighters on this card are saying, "Hey, man, this is the city of Rocky Balboa. I got to, you know, put on a knockout performance, all that jazz, blah blah." Let's go through this card and get your thoughts on some of these bouts. Actually, we'll do the whole bouts. We'll do the whole card, and you know, we'll break down a couple these things a little bit more in depth. The first one is Rafael Nadal taking on Paul Bradley, who is finally making his long-awaited official UFC debut, because he was on The Ultimate Fighter, but did have a what was the medical condition that he had?
I don't remember.
Was it ringworm? It was something staff. Oh, sorry, I should say staff.
You know what? It could have been. Actually, I don't want to say it because I'm wrong, but...
Okay, anyway, he had a condition that did not allow him to continue competing in the house or stay in the house. He was asked to leave the show, left, had a pretty good career outside, but now he gets the call on short notice to take on Rafael Nadal. Does he emerge victorious in this fight, or is it just too much, too soon for Paul Bradley?
I think the UFC jitters might get to him. If I was going to choose a winner, I'd go with Rafael Nadal. I think it's a big difference to fight outside the UFC and then come in, and especially with kind of the past, I think that's going to be the big issue here.
Yeah, I think I've been following Paul Bradley's career for a while. I really think that my heart says Paul Bradley, my head says Rafael Nadal. Is that fair? Oh, we didn't give our caveat. We have to give our caveat. We are not responsible for a silly fighter's game plan. What we're going to do here is predict who we think is going to win based on, you know, here are the facts. Here are the strengths. Here are the weaknesses. Here's what technically should happen in a fight. None of this a fight's a fight scenario. Strengths versus weaknesses. All right. Featherweight bout, Mike Brown taking on Nam Phan. Mike Brown, former WEC champion. He's at a crossroads in his career. He has to emerge victorious. All the pressure's on him, and Nam Phan just wants to continue to do what he has to do to rise up to featherweight rankings. But here's the situation. I think Mike Brown is going to dominate Nam Phan with his wrestling and pull out a unanimous judge's decision.
Yeah, I think Mike Thomas Brown is just, he's got something to prove now. I mean, especially after losing the title, and now he's two losses in a row. I think this is too much too fast for Nam Phan. I think Mike Thomas Brown is going to actually make an example of him.
All right. Next bout, stellar welterweight bout. And this is on the preliminary card. You can catch all these fights on Facebook, by the way. These last two fights we mentioned, the next two fights you can catch on Facebook. This welterweight tilt between Johnny Hendricks and Mike Pierce is a complete and utter gong show. I don't know how this fight's going to break down because it's so well matched. Man, Mike Pierce's wrestling is pretty sick. Hendricks' wrestling is just—it's just sick. His jiu-jitsu is good. This is a tough fight to break down. To me, this one's going to a decision. I'm trying to think here. Do I go with youth or do I go with the guy who's a bit more experienced? Well, let's see here. Mike Pierce is 30 years old. I think Hendricks is 27, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he is 27. I'll let you pick.
Oh, well, I think this is the biggest test for each of these guys. Well, maybe not Mike Pierce. I mean, coming in facing John Fitch is your first UFC fight. Probably the biggest fight of your career. That being said, I think that's the fight that most people know Pierce from, because he came into that fight and he made it into a real big war. A lot of people think Johnny Hendricks is going to do a lot in this division, and he's kind of rebounding after the Rick Story loss, and then he got another win. I'm going to go with Johnny Hendricks, but I'm not very confident in that pick because I think Mike Pierce has the ability to ruin anybody in this division.
I will echo your sentiments. I'm not confident in picking Mike Pierce, but I will go with Mike Pierce.
I'm simply going with Johnny Hendricks because I think he's got more power in his hands.
I for some reason, I mean, looking at Mike Pierce's record, and you know, he hasn't fought... He fought John Fitch, man. He went the distance with John Fitch.
It wasn't just the distance. I mean, that was a dirty fight. Yeah. Like they really had to grind that one out.
You know, and yeah, I'm going to go with Mike Pierce. I'm not confident, but I'll go with Mike Pierce. All right, Ivan Menjivar taking on Nick Pace. Ivan Menjivar from Montreal. This is a bantamweight bout. Nick Pace, tough guy, defeated Will Campuzano recently, lost to Demetrius Johnson, and there's nothing wrong with losing to Demetrius Johnson, but he did go to the decision with him, proving he's got skills, proving he's got the cardio, and he can go far. Now, it's tough to say about Ivan Menjivar, but I know Ivan personally as one of the few guys from way back in my UCC days. You know, he was unbelievable. We were also proud of him when he made it to the UFC and fought. It was Jeff Kearney fought in the UFC in his debut. I'm going to go with my heart and pick Ivan Menjivar.
Well, I'm going to go with Ivan Menjivar, but I would say that I'm going with my head. Here's a guy who's fought all the way from welterweight down to now bantamweight. Fought some of the toughest guys in there.
I think George St. Pierre's first opponent.
Yeah, and George even said that it was a mistake for that fight to be called the way it was. So I think Menjivar is just too experienced, you know, just too tough. I'm going to go with Menjivar. Not to say anything, you know, bad about Nick Pace. I just think Menjivar is going to win this fight.
My bad. It wasn't Jeff Curran. It was Matt Serra who he competed against. All right. Main card. The next two prelim fights you can catch actually on Rogers Sportsnet 1 starting at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The first bout will be Chad Money Mendez taking on Hani Yahya. I think Mendez is going to win this fight just strictly with his stellar wrestling.
I agree, but in combination with that, his submission defense, you know, a lot of people look past the fact that Hani Yahya is one of the best submission grapplers in the world. I mean, a prolific Abu Dhabi competitor, which is, I guess, the unofficial Olympics of no-gi grappling. And Hani Yahya is one of the guys who's, you know, top five every year. So I think Mendez is going to be able to stay out of that submissions, though, and just win, basically. I don't want to call it lamprey, but I think because of his last fights, he's been looking, you know, really good with his ground and pound. So I think he's going to win by TKO. Yeah,
and this next fight that you can catch on Sportsnet 1, Matt Hamill taking this fight on relatively short notice against Alexander the Mauler Gustafsson. This is going to be a complete war. This is, I mean, don't blink in this fight because these two guys are going to pound the living crap out of each other. And only because Matt Hamill survived Rampage Jackson, Alexander Gustafsson is going to have his hands full. If he thinks he's going to submit Matt Hamill, he may have another thing coming, even though his jits is good. I mean, Matt Hamill's just a tough fighter. I'm going to go with Matt Hamill in this fight.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Matt Hamill as well. I think in order for Gustafsson to submit him, he's going to have to get him down, and I don't think he has the wrestling to do that against someone like Matt Hamill. And, you know, I think with Hamill's power, you know, maybe he's not the best striker out there, but his power can really change a fight. So I think he's going to win this standing on his feet, throwing the hammer down.
All right, moving on to the main card. First bout of the pay-per-view broadcast will likely be Rory Aries McDonald, no longer the water boy. It's Rory Aries McDonald taking on Mike Pyle, Quicksand. Now, Mike Pyle wants to make an example of Rory McDonald, saying, listen, I've been through this type of kid before. His name was John Hathaway, and I proved to everyone that no one can take, you know, don't use me as a stepping stone. And Rory McDonald's like, I'm not saying I'm going to use you as a stepping stone, but I've got a ton of experience, and I train with, you know, some of the best in the world, i.e. George St. Pierre. And it was actually George who told me, Tyler, that, you know, the next champion at 170 will be Rory McDonald. And, you know, having known Rory as long as I have, having seen him train, just watching him grow up in this industry, I think he's going to pull off the victory against Mike Pyle.
Yeah, very tough fighter. I mean, Mike Pyle's been in there with pretty much all the toughest guys in this division. I mean,
Forrest Griffin.
We've said it before.
Not this division, but yeah,
we said it before. I mean, his first fight ever, it was against Rampage. I mean, talk about a guy who fight anybody. You take on your first fight, you're going to take Rampage. You know, Mike Pyle has an ability to prove us all wrong. I'm going to agree with you. I think that Rory McDonald is going to take this fight. I think this is a great test for him. If he can get through a Mike Pyle, it really solidifies him as one of those guys to look out for. I mean, we're already pretty much tracking him as the up-and-coming prospect of this division. But a win over a veteran like Mike Pyle really says something.
Why would I say Forrest Griffin when I was referring to Rampage Jackson? Can you explain that to me?
Because they look so much alike.
They don't. I don't know why. Anyway. Okay, let's move forward. This next bout is a middleweight tilt. Jorge Rivera taking on Konstantinos Filipou. I think this one's going to be more mental than physical because both guys are preparing for completely different fighters. Rivera was preparing for Alessio Sakara. Filipou was preparing for Rafael Natal. So, switching opponents, change up the training camp, don't have much time. This one's more physical or more mental than physical. I'm going to go with Konstantinos Filippou to pull off the upset.
Well, I think for Filippou, this would be a bigger name to get a win over than Rafael Nadal. I'm going to go with George Rivera. I think as far as like the last stab at his career, this is like his last go. He knows if he loses this, I mean, you might have to you know, call it quits.
He's already halfway out the door, though. He said he's going to retire after the Sakara fight.
So I think Rivera's going to leave it all in the cage. And I did pick him over Sakara, so I kind of want to stick with Jorge there. So.
Dare you pick against my fellow Italian? That's just rubbing it in. All right. Welterweight tilt between Dennis Superman Holloman and Brian Bad Boy Ebersole. Can Ebersole pull this off? I think so. I mean, as great as Holloman is on the ground, as experienced as he is, Ebersole just seems to have that ability to survive and annoy people. And I think he's going to annoy Holloman to the point where he's going to beat this guy up.
As awkward as Ebersole looks in the cage with his unorthodox striking and
shaved arrows on his chest,
yeah, even his grappling is kind of unorthodox. He was a Division I wrestler. He has a very extensive background in grappling that I guess a lot of people don't really know about. But to me, I think Dennis Holloman is one of those kind of hidden diamonds in the rough that not a lot of people know about. You know, he's
tapped out Matt Hughes twice,
a veteran who's been in there forever. Another guy who's changed all the weight classes, has a, you know, I think he's got over 60 fights under his belt, and he's a wrestler that's adapted the jiu-jitsu game together. I think he's going to be able to grab a submission or at least get a decision out of this one.
All right, co-main event. Vitor the Phenom Belfort returning for the first time since being kicked in the face by Anderson Silva, taking on Sexyama Yoshihiro Akiyama. I've got Vitor Belfort all over this fight. I think he's going
to
win.
And I think most of it has to do with the caveat you said before is, you know, fighters' kind of stupid game plans. You have one of the best judokas in MMA, you know, who fights brawls. I mean, he's won fight of the night every single time he's been in there.
Yep.
And he's brawling with some of the most prolific brawlers, you know, Chris Lieben being one. I'm going to go with Belfort. I think speed kills in this fight. You don't strike with Vitor Belfort unless you're Anderson Silva, and you're going to kick him in the face. And I don't think Akiyama is Anderson Silva, so I'm going to go with Vitor Belfort.
I don't think Alan Belcher, Chris Lieben, or Michael Bisping can strike like Vitor Belfort.
No.
I got Vitor Belfort, like I said, in this fight. And one of our regular callers, Kyle from Vegas, would be very happy with you because you said speed kills, because it's one of my analogies that I used when I break down fights. And I think you're absolutely right. Vitor is going to be just too fast. All right. Less than a minute to go here. We got to be real quick. Sugar Rashad Evans in the main event taking on Tito Ortiz, who is coming off that victory over Ryan Bader. He potentially could take out another top 10 fighter in 5 weeks. This one's going to be explosive in the first round, but bottom line is, with that octagon rust that Evans is going to have being out for 14 months, if Ortiz can carry him, he may be able to pull off a decision.
I mean, how long ago was their last fight?
4 years ago.
4 years ago. I think in that time, Rashad has
improved
quite a bit. I mean, when Tito last fought him, he was pretty green. That being said, I think, you know, everything is, for Tito to pull off an upset is in his favor in this fight. You have Rashad coming off a long layoff, Tito coming off a huge win, and he's in great shape, healthy. You know, and they had a very close fight, so the mental aspect is there as well. I still think Rashad's going to pull this one off.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I think he's just improved too much. Too much is at stake, but I'm... You know, I'm kind of going with
the
resurgence.
You're pointing at your heart because, you know, I picked with my heart there.
I'm kind of going with the resurgence of Tito Ortiz. I just want him to win, but, you know, I think Rashad's going to win this, but I'll probably be cheering for Tito come Saturday night.
And I concur. All right. Well, I'm going to pick Tito. I got to pick Tito. Come on. Rashad, I love you, bro, but got to pick Tito in this fight here. Thank you very much for coming in, Tyler.
Thank you.
Once again, you can catch Tyler Mason on Twitter at Tyler Mason, myself at Showdown Joe. You'll be listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590 in Toronto, and the Fan 960 in Calgary.